Sometimes people, even today, mistakenly say that George Washington was not a Christian. Well, I had the privilege to co-write a very large book on the subject, which documents, I think, beyond a reasonable doubt, that George Washington was an 18th century Anglican and all that that entails. The main author was Dr. Peter Lilback, who is the president of Westminster Theological Seminary. The name of the book is George Washington's Sacred Fire. And in this particular segment, what we're going to do is focus on the churches of George Washington. Dr. Lilback, so great to have you on again. Thank you for joining us.
Jerry, what a great joy to be with you and to share our labors on Washington with your listening audience. Thanks so much.
Sure. Okay, how often did George Washington go to church?
Well, first of all, we know that his life is filled with different cities where he lived. And before he became, if you will, an American national hero, leading the army and then serving in government and then being a retired president as just a Virginian back in what they called the Old Dominion, he went as often as the weather would permit him to travel the 7 to 9 miles to his local church, which is in Lorton, Virginia. It's called the Pohick Church. That was where he most often worshiped. And you need to realize that back in those days when you went to church, if you were fortunate like Washington, you could travel with a carriage and horses. But the roads were muddy, there were no heaters, and you went to a church that maybe took an hour or more to get to and back home from that was unheated. And so it was really a hard thing to travel that far, and he was pretty faithful. And on top of that, he also served as a church warden and a vestryman at various times in his church, which meant he would often have to travel on horseback to meetings in different towns and places to oversee the church's life. So he was truly a churchman of his day. And then finally, we also know from his diaries that when he couldn't make it out to worship, that sometimes some of the ministers that would come by to Mount Vernon, and his records show that over 50 ministers actually stayed in his home at Mount Vernon through the years, that they would provide a worship service or a communion in their family. And if that didn't happen, we also have records that on the Lord's Day in the afternoon, George and Martha would actually read sermons together, and George Washington was a sermon collector. So by anyone's definition, that's a churchman, someone who believed in his church.
And this Lorton Church, located in Lorton, Virginia, the Pohick Church, didn't he even help identify where it would be as a land surveyor? In other words, which particular location? And describe the church in terms of some of its accoutrements, such as the reredos. What is a reredos? And let's get into that.
Okay, that's great. Well, basically, we know that Virginia was an Anglican colony, which meant then it had the Anglican Church, the Church of England, as its established church. Therefore, it was expected of all the leadership of the various regions that they would be part of the church's life. That was expected. So each town, as it began to grow, would have an Anglican community, and they would try to support the pastor. So one of the things we know in Washington's own records, we can establish he regularly supported his church by giving a fair amount of his tobacco that he raised to be sold so that it would take care of the pastor, the church building, the communion wine, buying the organ, paying for the pew, and other things that showed that he was involved as a high-level member of the congregation. So they actually would each year have pew rents. He would actually pay for a pew for the year, and it's clear that he did that. He was very concerned to support his church in a number of very practical ways. Now, a reredos is a technical liturgical word that describes the written holy texts that the congregants use in worship that would have been placed on the walls of the church. So traditionally, the things that you would see on the walls of the church, such as at the Pohick Church, would be the Ten Commandments, the Apostles' Creed, the Lord's Prayer. These sorts of things would be used regularly in worship, and since it was very easy for people to say things that they would want to say regularly and say them in unity, instead of having a hymn book or a prayer book in front of you, you could actually look up and read those in unison with the minister leading the service. So Washington throughout his life was not only a prayer book user, he had one he actually had sized and had his name put on it so he could carry it with him, he says, in the order. But when he would go to worship, he would regularly be saying the Ten Commandments, the Lord's Prayer, and also the Apostles' Creed. So Washington was clearly in what we would call the Judeo-Christian tradition.
And I understand, as far as the actual location of the church on the property at Pohick, that Washington, George Washington, as a surveyor, won over, I guess they were having a little contest or something. George Mason also said, oh, no, I think the church building should be here, but Washington's pick ended up carrying the day, and that book, that building has been there since, you know, the 17-something. I'm not even sure which decade, but a long time.
As anyone who's been part of a congregation knows through the years, there are always big debates that begin to happen when you talk about where will we build the church, what kind of church will we build, what color will the carpet be? I mean, all those kind of things become part of it. And so according to the records, when the debate between some of the leading families of the area came about, Washington solved the issue by using his skills he had developed as a young man as a surveyor, and he demonstrated that the placement of the church was the most equitable place for the people who would be regularly worshiping there. And so using his skills of surveying, he proved the case, and it won the argument.
Now, the common practice in those days is when people would die, let's say congregation members or maybe even just local neighbors or something, that the churchyards were used as graveyards. And I remember there were graves at Pohick.
Yes, I think the tradition, going back actually even into the medieval times, people that were really dignitaries, high-level leaders in church or in government, would hope they could actually be buried within the church. They might be buried under the stones or in the walls or in the foundations. That was a real honor and a way of showing that identity of the forefathers of the faith was to hope that they could be buried near the church. And so the church has traditionally created cemeteries or graveyards that were associated with them. So here in Philadelphia, for example, if you come to Christ Church, just a block or two away is called Christ Church Burial Grounds, and about six or seven of the signers of the Declaration of Independence are buried there. So it shows how much that local church had an impact on the beginning of America. But in Washington's case, he was not buried at his church there, and there are various reasons for that. One is, he didn't continue to worship his entire life at the Pohick Church. Later on, after his presidency, he worshiped in Alexandria, and that church became his regular church, where one of his lifelong friends had become the minister, and he would worship with him there. But on the great estate of Mount Vernon, he actually had, in the family tradition, already a crypt where family members were buried. So part of their vision was, this property would be, if you will, their long-term family estate. And the idea is that various family members from generation to generation would be buried right there. And so in Washington's will, he provided for a new crypt to be built. He was actually buried with his wife, Martha, in that new crypt. And, of course, on that, it has the marvelous words from the Gospel of John, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believes in me shall never die. Mm-hmm. So the Gospel of John's promise from Jesus of resurrection life is right there on the stone in that crypt. And what is also interesting is that those words are the very first words that came from the Book of Common Prayer, the standard of worship for the Anglican tradition, in its funeral service. In fact, those are words that Washington himself read when he acted, if you will, as the chaplain when his General Braddock in the French and Indian War was killed outside of what we'd call today modern-day Pittsburgh at the Battle of Monongahela. Washington, by torchlight, read the funeral service from the Book of Common Prayer, and those are exactly the words he said, because that's what begins the Anglican funeral service in that Book of Common Prayer that was used by Washington in those days.
Hmm. Okay, now, churches of George Washington, they would absolutely include Pohick at Lorton. They would also include Christ Church at Alexandria, which is where he worshipped for the last 10 years or so of his life. That's where his funeral was. St. Paul's Chapel in New York City, Christ Church in Philadelphia during the time that they were writing the Constitution, and George Washington was presiding over that. I've also been in a church in Providence, Rhode Island, where it had a pew of George Washington. So he worshipped there, too. So comment on any of those churches you wish.
Okay, well, we know, again, this is what's interesting, because Washington did keep a diary. Not all of them have been preserved. But in the diary, he will often tell us that he worshipped, or if a minister was visiting. And when he traveled, and he took a tour after becoming president, and also while he's traveling as general to different places, and he will have records, or the churches will have records or remembrances of when the general or the president came to worship with them. So in Philadelphia, Christ Church, as I mentioned earlier, was mm-hmm. a very strategic place. Many of our founders were members there, and they were in the burial grounds. But Washington, there's a pew there that's to this day is called the President's Pew or Washington's Pew. And it's where Washington would worship when he was at Christ Church on Sunday when he was president, while the government was still housed in Philadelphia before it moved to its new location in what Washington called the Federal City, but today we call it Washington, D.C. Then also in Alexandria, the church that he worshiped there, Lord Fairfax's son he was a loyalist after the war. He was welcomed back into fellowship with Washington. There was no hard feelings. He recognized issues of conscience. And he became the preacher, and Washington would go and hear his friend preach. In fact, in our book, we have one of the lost sermons of Reverend Fairfax that's on the new birth. It's one of the appendices in our book. That's one of the things I'm kind of proud of, a lost sermon that was from Washington's pastor, and it's a gospel sermon, so it's pretty clear about the need for the new birth. But then also, we know that pew, interestingly, when we visited there and saw it, when we started our book, their docents would say, of course, George Washington was a deist. But after our book came out and we had the joy of making the case for Washington's faith, when they invited me back, actually it was amazing, on the 275th anniversary of Washington's birthday, exactly by the old calendar, fell on a Sunday for Vesper service on a Sunday afternoon, I got to preach Washington's favorite Bible verse from Micah 4:4 from the Bible from Mount Vernon. That was a special moment. And they told me when I was there, they said, you know, now when people ask the question, we say, no, George Washington was a Christian. And so that's one of the joyful accomplishments of our work, Jerry, that we can actually say we helped Washington be reclaimed by his church as a member of their church, as a man of faith. So that's important. Now, there are other places he worshipped as well. One of the ones that I like to think about is when he was president, there was this yellow fever epidemic that fell on Philadelphia. If I'm remembering the date right, I think it was 1795. It was some 5,000 people died, which was a gigantic number of people for a city to lose in that.
We have about 1 minute left.
Fled. Mm-hmm. Congress fled. And so Washington ended up fleeing a day's journey, and he went to a place called Germantown. Today it's just part of Philadelphia. But his Oval Office, if you will, was in a Reformed minister's office, and according to the church's records, they say while Washington was there, he communed in that church. So we see that he had a heart to commune. In fact, lastly then, you mentioned the little chapel up in New York City. Washington communed there after his taking his inaugural vows, and we know that from an eyewitness account given to us from Mrs. Alexander Hamilton, who said, I had the joy of kneeling and taking communion today with the newly inaugurated president.
So when
Washington was a churchman.
Absolutely. And by the way, when you say the word commune, you mean by that participating in Holy Communion.
Exactly right.
Yeah. All right. Providence.org or providenceforum.org for more information. And Dr. Lilbeck, we'll have you on and we'll talk more about George Washington and his faith.